Okay, can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to kind of go through a little roll call and just remind everybody we've got the tape rolling. We'll get started as people join, they can join. Remind everybody here that we are recording this and we are going to put it as a podcast. And I'll go around the room and just call your name and then ask you to kind of introduce yourself and tell us who you work with. And I'm Brian Brady, and I'm a managing director for Worldwide Credit Corporation. I do fund hard money loans. I'm mostly a trust deeds broker and primarily an originator. Mitch, how about you?
I'm Mitch Zeichner. I'm with Equity Funding Group based here in San Diego. And we are a hard money lender, mostly focusing on residential 1 to 4 and 5 plus units as well, lending anywhere from $100,000 up to about $3 million, although we're starting to look at loans up to $10 million.
And you are an account executive there, correct, Mitch?
Correct, exactly.
Okay. Dean, you're another one of our presenters with Presidio Mortgage.
Yes. We are also obviously a hard money lender. We do raw land, construction, commercial, pretty much everything. Probably more of the traditional hard money. LTV-wise, other than raw land, we'll go up to 65%. Raw land is 50%, but we'll look at anything regardless of credit, income, assets, and anywhere in California. We're also located in Rancho Santa Fe.
Mitch, just as a side, Dean, you mentioned you do anything in California. Do you go outside the state?
We've done some stuff in Arizona, Nevada, Colorado. So that's pretty much it.
Okay. How about you, Mitch?
Yes, we also lend in addition to California, Nevada, and Arizona.
Okay.
We do typically up to 70% with no minimum FICO scores. We can push it to 75 on a case basis.
Okay. John, how about you? You're our most recent joiner.
Yeah, John Morrow here. I'm hailing from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm actually a commercial real estate investor, specialized primarily in raw land, and I'm always interested in new funding sources, so I thought I would just pop on the call tonight.
Great. How did you find us, John?
I saw your post on the Bloodhound Realty.
Oh, great. Super.
.com, so decided to pop in.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Thank you.
Our final person here, Rob, I'm going to say your last name, hopefully, correctly, Lejuan?
Hey, man, you nailed it.
Okay, great. Rob Lejuan.
Yeah, and I'm in Orange County, California. Been the last 5 years doing primarily subprime lending, and was a branch manager in a net branch. I don't know if you guys, most of you know what that is. And in the last couple months, ended up in me being owed a lot of money and not getting paid. So I'm out of the net branch and beginning to operate my own mortgage brokerage company.
Oh, well, that's great. I won't say here on the call, but I can guess where you worked, and I commend you for going off on your own. So,
yeah,
wonderful.
I should have figured that out a long time ago, but, you know, better late than never.
True. And are you a Department of Real Estate broker or a CFL lender?
DRE
lender. Excellent. For those of you on the call, if you're listening to this, California is unique in that we have two licensing sources, the Department of Real Estate and both the Department of Corporations can license lenders. And most of the hard money type transactions are done under a Department of Real Estate license. So I'll start off here with a comment, and I'm going to ask, Dean and Mitch to join in too when I do this. And the first part of the question is, what is hard money? And to break this thing down to the very basics, I saw a post by a lady named Ardell Dellalagia. She was talking about prepayment penalties. She's a real estate agent. And in the third paragraph here of her post, she says, say you go to your friend Joe and ask him to lend you $20,000. And if you guys can read that, it actually talks about the negotiation between a credit-challenged borrower and a private mortgage lender. Hard money in many cases are private individuals. They're not institutions, or they could be like a private pension fund or a hedge fund. Mitch, how about you? Can you kind of jump in and tell me what your definition might be on that?
Sure. I mean, a definition of hard money?
Yeah, a definition of hard money, or how you guys might, you know, how it might differ from institutional type mortgage lending.
Well, basically, we're backed by one family who decided to diversify by getting involved in trustee lending. So basically, what they've done is put their fund together with it's just them, and lend on real property, like we talked about before, residential and apartments. Basically, we're different from conventional lending in that when it comes down to it, we're just looking at the equity position when push comes to shove. Well, we do get a little more aggressive than a lot of our competition on the LTV spectrum. We will go to 75%. We do take a little bit harder look at the person we're lending to. So in that respect, we're a little more like conventional lending. So if our LTVs are low in the 50 to 60% range, we're going to be able to move a little more quickly than if we're in the 70-75 range and ask for a little bit more information, background on the borrower. So, you know, speed has a lot to do with it. We have our own underwriting. We draw our own docs, and we service our own loans here as well. So in that regard, we can move a little bit faster than conventional lenders.
So a hard money lender, in your case, as a hard money lender or a private mortgage lender, you guys are a specific fund, and the fund, if you will, is the bank of the wealthy family, so to speak. Rob and John, do you understand the difference there in as much as they're really underwriting just for a wealthy family's guidelines?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Dean, how about you? What would you define hard money, and how does it play into your universe?
Well, pretty much the way we work it, we have about over 70 investors, about the same ones we've had for the last 15 years. We pretty much find the loan for them. We underwrite it. We do all the work, make sure it's a decent investment. And then we know which of those guys like raw land or like commercial or construction, whatever it is, their preferences. And we pass it by them to see if they're interested. And if they are, then they actually become the first trust deed. Borrower pays them directly. We're pretty much put the two together, and then we don't control the paperwork. We don't manage it. It's up to the investor to manage it.
So they service it themselves also, Dean?
Yeah, most of them do. There's a few of them we've had for a long time that are pretty old, and we'll do it for them, but 90% of them, 95%, they service themselves.
So you are really a traditional trust deed broker. Is that probably true?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. That's helpful. In California, trust deed broking is really really doing exactly what Dean is saying, and that is working with a stable of 70 or 100 different private individuals and knowing what their sweet spots are and what they like to invest in or what they like to make loans on. And when that loan application comes in, they're able to disseminate that and say, okay, let me put the package together and give it to Dr. Smith. And he might want to put that in his pension fund. So I think the difference in hard money is that it's a private mortgage. And the nice thing about it is you don't have to deal with the, well, it's getting sold, so you need this piece of paper. So that's, in terms of a straight definition, that's where we'd say that's probably a good way to say what hard money is. Second thing I talked about or put up on the agenda was, who are these new hard money lenders? In the last 5 or 6 months, have you guys noticed, the originators out there, have you noticed that all of a sudden there's all these hard money lenders out there? Have you noticed that, Rob?
Yeah, I have. If you go into Scotsman's Guide, you'll see a lot of new hard money lenders popped up in there.
You sure will. I tried to put together, let's see when I put this together. Back in February, I tried to put together a resource guide for California mortgage brokers, and it was, and of course, Dean and Mitch will put you up on this one too. But this is just a short list of some of the new hard money lenders. And just so you understand what they are, they are securitizing a lot of these loans, and I kind of call them the new subprime. They're not a what I would call a traditional hard money lender like Mitch or like Dean. Have you had any experiences with these folks, Rob or John?
Not yet. Well, only being compliant.
Pardon me?
It seems like their guidelines seem a little tighter. They've got a tighter box.
They do, and I think that the one true thing we can say is that they're all straight residential, absolutely looking at single-family residents or condos, and they're 65 or 70% loan-to-value.
And there are a lot of these guys out there. My family's company currently has over $20 million in hard money loans. That we're signed on to, and we like it because in the raw land market, you're limited when you get into larger loan amounts on who you can go to, especially if you're in a developing area. Because if you go to a bank, a local bank in the area, and they only have a $40 million loan portfolio, and you need a $15 million loan.
Yeah, they get a little squeamish when you try to take out 40% of their portfolio, right?
Yeah, and if you're going to rezone something and develop it and then sell it off piece by piece, your profit margin is so large as well that if you're going to end up paying a couple points in a higher interest rate, it doesn't really matter.
Excellent point. Have you dealt with specific... This is John, correct, in North Carolina?
Yes.
Have you dealt with specific investors or... What has been your experience when you go looking for those loans? Do they seem like institutions, or do you go to a broker and he puts you together with a private mortgage?
Well, right now we're actually working with a broker to refinance two of our hard money loans. But we have both friends that are invested with us. We have about 37 families in three different countries that are invested with us. And we also have relationships with a couple hard money lenders that just provide us the money. And usually, those are just wealthy individuals.
Okay.
With a company wrapped around the money that they have. And then we develop a relationship with them over time. And it's nice because we can give them a call and within 2 or 3 days have several million dollars wired over.
That's one of the real advantages of hard money is if you have the right property and you have the right originator or broker, or in your case, the right relationship, and a borrower gives you a call, you can pretty much get on the phone to a Mitch or a Dean and say, this is my deal, this is what it looks like, and they can say to you, yeah, we'll probably fund that, bring the package in. Well, I'm going to move on here and kind of talk a little bit about, I said, what is trust deed broking? I think Dean did a nice job at really defining that to us. Dean, when you said you have a stable of 70 investors that you've got a long-term relationship with, and trust deed broking is when someone calls you and needs a loan, like a broker or an individual, you match them up with the investor who has that the taste for that particular loan.
Well, and what's most important about that, too, is the reliability of the investor. We've had cases where we've had new guys come in, they got a bunch of cash, we go to close, and they don't show up, or they won't send their money in, so then we got to find one of our usual guys and then rush the whole deal trying to get it done. So we're, you really have to find a reliable set of investors who are going to show up at closing with a check.
I'm glad you brought that up. That really happens, too.
Yes.
I had it a couple of months ago, and I was working with a broker on a loan, and I had to call him and say, he just chickened out.
Yeah.
And the broker said, what? I said, I don't have an answer. We'll have to scramble. I'm glad you brought that up. The number four, how do you find investors for private mortgages if you're an originator? Dean and Mitch and myself, and I'm sure Rob, as you're looking around, in many ways, a lot of people don't like to give up their private investors. If Dean and Mitch, if you were to strike out on your own right now, when I say strike out on your own, just say I wanted to start over and build it up, how would you find investors for private mortgages right now?
I'd probably start with family.
Okay.
And then from there, find their friends. But, you know, just marketing yourself out, you're looking for trouble because it's the same thing. You call them up, they say, yeah, they'll do it, and then come closing, they don't do it. Now you're stuck. So I just think it takes a while to find the find that reliable person who's willing to put that much money out.
Yes. How about you, Mitch? Have you any thoughts on that?
I would agree. I mean, that, you know, back to your point about, you know, making sure the investor's there with the funds, you know, our market is very fragmented, and a lot of these newer players coming to the plate, you know, it's interesting who can actually close the deals and who can't. But, you know, specifically to your question, I agree with Dean. I mean, you know, it's showing your track record of deals closed and performed, and making the investor comfortable enough with the rate of return to be able to interest them to want to invest in these deeds. You know, with the market and the roadblocks there today are that the values, as values come down and equities equity positions start to become leaner, it's finding, you know, finding the deals to make your investors comfortable.
Yes.
Some people's affinity to risk is greater than others. So
that's true.
You know, like Dean was saying before as well, some are interested in just land deals, and then others, you know, want a real piece of property on that land.
Yes. I'll share a secret that I've found for some of the originators, and I'll also go back to what Dean and Mitch are saying. The easiest and simplest way to find a trust deed investor is to go down to your local title company and have them run a list of private mortgages, and they can do that for you. And if you get it here in San Diego County, for example, they ran it for me last year, and it was about, oh gosh, it had to be about 300 pages long. And it's literally combing through the tax records to see who these investors or these lenders really are. Many times if you see that, you'll see, it might say the so-and-so family trust. And then getting in contact with them is you literally have to Google them and see if they have a phone number or look them up in the phone book and call them up and say, do you invest in trust deeds? What do you look for? How much money are you sitting on? And then you have to roll the dice, right, Dean? I mean, you know, you guys have a very established source, but as I was building up my investor list, you have to roll the dice, and someone doesn't show up to closing, and it's frustrating.
Right.
So for those of you who are listening and will be trying to establish a book of investors, that might be the one way to do it. The second way is that I found when I first started was to contact people like Mitch or Dean and have them help you along with the deals. If you're not engaged in it in 5 or 6 loans a month, if you're only going to do 3 to 5 of these a year, it sometimes makes a lot more sense to come to either someone like at Worldwide or someone at Presidio Mortgage, or to go over to Mitch and say, hey, look, I have these deals. Can you guys get these things funded for me and leave a little bit more money on the table? Rob, what's been your experience so far in the hard money game?
Well, I haven't done that many of them.
Okay.
But the ones I've done, it's always been a struggle on value. The BPO, the field review, comes in, and we're really tied up against the ceiling, which is whatever it is, 65 or 70. That's where I've had a lot of deals die. I think the hardest part is because I haven't done it that much, is knowing where to go.
Okay.
Eastern Savings is gigantic, right?
Yes.
Been there a lot, had a lot of things die there. That's the hardest thing for me. Is it because I'm not doing it exclusively, or up to this point I haven't, is knowing where to go.
Okay. That is a Eastern Savings is what I might call, even though they're not new, this new breed of hard money lender. It's quasi-subprime and quasi-hard money. Certainly, I hope these are two sources you can find right now in Mitch and Dean. And as I said, at the end of this, we'll be posting up links to everybody also. And at the end of this call, we'll have Mitch and Dean pass out their phone numbers.
You know, the other thing, too, if you're looking for things to talk about, is marketing for hard money.
Yes.
That's something I'm interested in as well.
Okay. I'll touch on that at the end, I think. John, have you any comments on that? I mean, how do you find investors for private mortgages? Someone will make a loan to you.
Well, a couple things on that. When we started, it was just more about the networking.
Mm-hmm.
Where you start with one person, you do well by them, you make them some money, and it spreads to five more people. And then over time, that really grows, especially when we first started, our investors took equity positions, and they averaged 100% per year for 3 years. And
wow.
Something like that happens. Now, it's dropped off since then. Now we're down in the 30s and the 50s, which is still pretty good. But when we had those 3 years, those investors made a lot of money, and we very quickly went from two families to 37 families. Also, I think it helps if you have a deal to market to them. If you've got a deal all set up and ready to go, it's a lot easier for someone to visualize than if all you have is an abstract concept on how much money they're going to make.
Yes.
If you can go with something all lined up, then it's a lot easier to draw that person in and get them excited. But, yeah, the danger of them not showing up or backing out, that happens all the time.
All right. So, and when you find some reliable sources, that tends to not happen as much.
Yeah, and on the larger sources of money, I mean, when you're trying to raise a couple hundred thousand dollars here and there, in my experience, those people are back out a lot more often. But if you have someone commit, $1, $2, $3 million
yes.
at a time, out of their own pocket, usually those people are more sophisticated investors and more sensitive to what a deal requires.
Thanks, Rob. Another thing I'll point out, I just brought up here on the screen. This link is cmabrokers.org. Dean and Mitch, do you guys belong or participate in this much, the California Mortgage Association?
No, I don't.
No? How about you, Mitch? Do you guys participate in that much?
Currently, we are not.
Okay. Rob, to tell you what this is, as you look for investors, one of the the California Mortgage Association is sort of like the California Association of Mortgage Brokers for private money. There are some lenders in there. Many of the people are actually brokers too, and the point I want to make to you is this is for everybody. As you're shopping a deal, like John pointed out here, you get a loan that you think is going to make sense for a private mortgage. If you're just going to other brokers, that's okay if they're credible sources that specialize in hard money. But I don't know how many times I've seen a daisy chain of 5, 6, or 7 brokers. You guys have probably seen that too. Dean, have you seen that?
You mean where we get a deal that's gone through?
Yeah, and you're talking to someone and they're saying, oh, well, I've got 3 or 4 other brokers on the back end. You know, in other words, one broker called another who called another.
Right.
And it ends up in your shoes.
Yeah, and if we can do it, they're going to split 2 points themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about you, Mitch? Have you seen that a lot too?
Quite a bit, actually, yeah.
Quite a bit. So, Rob, to you, Rob specifically, and to people listening in general, the California Mortgage Association is a great starting place. However, if you're talking to people and calling around for private money lenders, many of the people you're talking to are brokers. So you really want to find out if you're dealing with a principal who's willing to, you know, write a check or send a wire, or if you're dealing with a broker.
Okay.
I imagine we have Mark here.
Yes.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good. Sorry to be late.
That's no worries. We got you here, and we're glad you're here. Mark, where are you from originally? Where are you from?
Sacramento, California.
Okay. Mark, I've got two people I'll point out to you, Dean Huntley and a couple other people, but Dean Huntley and Mitch Zeichner, they're actually lenders who actual hard money lenders here in California.
Cool.
So where we were is the other where we're. Let's go to our next spot here, and we'll find out what we're doing here next. Trying to define what a California mortgage pool is. Mitch, I don't think you guys are a pool, are you? You're just a private family, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Dean, have you had any experiences in raising money via the California mortgage pools?
No, I haven't.
Okay. For the listeners and for Mark and Rob, I'll define this. One way that some of the new breed of lenders that have come out there have raised money is through a thing called a California mortgage pool. And if they are a Department of Corporations CFL lender, and all of their investors make their primary residence in the state of California, and all of the loans they make are on California properties, they can raise money like a mutual fund, for lack of a better way to put it, or a partnership without having to register with the Securities and Exchange Commission. They have an exemption for that.
Is that like Emerald Bay?
That's exactly it. Emerald Bay is a CFL lender, and, boy, I'm drawing a blank, guys. Who else was on the panel with you the other day, Dean and Mitch?
Wally.
Not Wally. Marty.
ResCap.
Residential Capital is a CFL lender.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
Advantages to them are that it's pretty much money that they've raised so they can make the credit decision and the loan decision right off the spot. Disadvantages, they're raising money in $25,000 and $50,000 increments. They're managing it in a pool, and they're trying to make money off the spread. So what does that mean to you as an originator? Well, if they're trying to get 12 and 13% for their investors, and they want to make 3 or 4%, you know, the returns that they're going to start giving you and your customers are going to be upwards of 16, 17, and 18%. Has anybody noticed that with CFL pools, with lenders that are raising money with CFL pools? No? Okay. Any questions on what a California mortgage pool is from anybody?
You know, I do have a question.
Sure.
In regards to ResCap, one thing that's interesting about them is that they have a HELOC product. So if you have somebody in a foreclosure that's got a first at 6% and they're behind and their scores are below 500, you can do a HELOC and, 16%, but they're saving that first, and that's attractive. But I don't see that kind of product in a traditional hard money, situation. Is that because most private investors don't want to throw 25 at a deal? They want to throw a lot more than that.
I'll turn that over to Mitch, I think. Mitch, don't you have a line of credit product?
You know, currently we do not. We are researching that now, though. Good question. And it just takes a bit of time and the right backing to get that sort of product underwritten. Like, we're probably going to work with Wall Street to put that together.
Okay.
Because the volume we're going to be doing and you know, is going to require a bigger pool of funds. The other reason is, I mean, those types of loans are also, you know, there's covered Section 32 loans. We're not in the business of doing as of yet either. So we're getting smarter about how to make those loans and do it the right way. So
I think one of the other reasons that lines of credit are Dean, maybe you can help me with this too. Aren't HELOCs exempt from some of those Section 32 and California high cost loans?
Yes, and that's actually how ResCap, if they get around it, but they don't have to follow Section 32, which is how they can charge more points and higher fees and stuff. I mean, it's just, they don't, like for us, we're only going to do first and second trust deeds, mostly first,
yes.
But we're going to follow Section 32 if it's owner-occupied.
Yes.
So we're not going to charge more than 6 points. You know, you have to cut processing fees. You know, you have to really do a lot. We don't like them, but we'll do them.
Mark, were you the one that made that comment about the fact that you can keep that first intact?
No.
That was Rob?
Yeah.
Okay, Rob.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for bringing that up. Both of you two, both Dean and Mitch, you both offer second mortgage products, though. So if someone has a 5.25% first, you don't have to touch it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
If it's for us, if it's non-owner occupied, we'll look at it and possibly do it. But
okay.
If it's owner occupied, we're not going to touch it.
My experience with brokers, if you call me, is we do have an investor. We do have investors that will do second mortgages, and we'd prefer if they have a good first lien. If they have a good first loan, we don't want to touch it too much.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. How to price loans. Okay. This is kind of an interesting topic because I'll direct this question to both Mark and Rob. Mark, let me start with this. Mark, up in Sacramento, have you had any experience with hard money loans yet?
Yeah, I have a little bit. There have been a couple of local lenders who have done that over the years, and then I have done some just on my own, but not just kind of ancillary to my business. So I've had about say $1.5 million in total funds out there at various times, just on sometimes on first trustees, sometimes on seconds. A lot of times, just those kinds of almost like a portfolio underwriting deal where you. But I don't have a real. I didn't set out to do hard money as a business.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I was, which kind of leads me to this question of how, what we're looking at with in terms of pricing.
Yeah.
In California, we do have our hands tied. And it's for owner-occupied loans because it's because in addition to the Section 32 lending, California has a high-cost loan statute. Dean, are you comfortable touching on that? Or?
Well, for us, we won't go more than 8 over prime.
I think it's 8 over the 10-year or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. How about the and the fees of... Unlike Section 32, the California high-cost loans do cap total fees at 5.99%?
We put it at 6. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the debt-to-income ratio cannot be more than 55%.
Correct. And I don't think we can actually do stated income loans. Is that correct, or can you do them?
Well, we're doing them, but we have asked for... some sort of proof,
yes.
A tax statement or something, but that's about it.
Yeah, or bank statements or something to show that there's some sort of ability to repay.
Exactly.
And the thing to remember for the listeners are that, most of this money comes at a cost. For example, Mitch, I imagine if I have a 70% loan, if I have a 70% loan to value, whether there's a notice of default filed, we're going to get money from you at either par or a couple of points cost. Is that correct?
That's right. We our cheapest money is at par and then up to 3 points. We actually have created a wholesale rate sheet that I think most brokers and loan officers are familiar with. So, around our interest-only product and our NEG-AMP product, we have... corresponding margins. So at par, you've got a slightly higher margin, and at 1, 2, 3 points cost, you start to buy down that margin. So we've taken a little bit different take than I think most of the other players out there.
And Dean, if you have money coming out to a broker, it's going to come out with some points in it also, isn't it?
Yeah, we're pretty straightforward. We're right around 4 or 5 points on everything.
Okay.
On offers. Seconds, they go up.
And, that's pretty much the same with me. If you're coming to our company, we're going to structure a deal with one of our private investors, and we're probably going to put that out at 3 points to a broker. So the point I'm trying to make on this pricing here is a lot of people look at the 5 or 6 points that might go into a loan and say, gosh, someone's really getting rich off it, and don't let me take away. I'm sure people are doing quite well if they're doing volume. But the concept of getting rich off one loan just probably isn't there. I'll turn over to the originators here in California. Rob, what has been your experience with that? Have you run into roadblocks or where you didn't feel you could make a fair return?
Yeah. In California, it's different in different states. I've got a deal in Arizona right now for about $1 million, and I'm looking to make about $2.5 million. I'm pretty happy about it.
Is someone,
is that mine?
If anybody's on a speaker, an earphone? That could be tough on the call. Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Thank you. Who did we lose, Rob?
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
But I think your point is right, is that if you're saying don't think you're going to make 3-4 points as a broker.
Yeah, that is correct. And the point I try to make to a lot of people is, you know, on your typical subprime deals, you're probably going to make 2 points, maybe a little bit more in the past. Yet I found that brokers come over to this side, if you will, and they'll go, well, gosh, I want to charge 6 points because the guy's over a barrel. Well, that's you're going to find that most lenders don't really particularly cotton to that. Dean, have you noticed that? Okay, we lost Dean.
I just got back. My battery died.
Okay.
Dean, so I didn't get any questions.
Okay, that's fine. How about you, Mark? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, although, again, I haven't done a lot of that, but I understand your point, which is it looks like a lot of money. You know, as we used to say in commercial real estate, big commissions, little checks.
Right.
Everybody's taking a piece, and nobody's getting that whole chunk.
Yeah. So I think that's the one part I'd like to leave with everybody about item number six. When you're pricing these loans, understand that if you're making 2 or even 3 points as an originator on a loan like this, you're really doing quite well. Because there are investors to pay, and sometimes the investors are taking some of those points. And the company that's putting the deal together, the hard money lender, that may be either selling that off or a trust deed broker, they're going to make some points also. So I'll move us to the last part, the last section here, and is how do you market your new private mortgage product line? Dean, you've been doing this a while as a trust deed broker, and maybe you can kind of share with me how you do it.
Well, I would say most of what we do is referral based. So we do some retail, but most of it's wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk to other mortgage companies and network ourselves. I mean, it's more of a, I don't know if we would deal directly with the public or at least sell ourselves directly to the public.
Yes.
But we do market ourselves with banks and other mortgage companies, because that's where we're going to get our business from. And we've done some Craigslist and Google and stuff like that, but most of it's referrals.
Mitch, how about you?
Very similar. I was a loan officer for 7 years prior to coming to Equity Funding Group, and it's interesting. I started with the shop I came from and just rolled from there, and just we hit all the broker shops in the area and market on the email and attend a lot of the conferences in Southern California. So just a lot of networking and word of mouth.
I'll share with the originators here that's how I built up my hard money business was through brokers. The reason being is most originators or brokers that are out there have no clue about how to put together a hard money loan. And if you are in that area, like, for example, Mark, you're in Sacramento, and Rob, you're in Orange County, I'd say the first thing you can do is just stop into some broker shops that you know and say, hey, I've got some access to some hard money deals if you need help putting them together. And by doing that, as you start talking to the investors, you'll find that you can actually attract deals that way. The other thing I noticed was this. There's a very easy and simple way to do it. It's just time-consuming, and that is to subscribe to a notice of default or a notice of trustee sale list. And if you really wanted to develop this business and to really go out and try to find people who could use help, many of them are going to be in that notice of default or notice of trustee sale list. The company I got it from was called County Records Service, and I'll put that link up on the blog also. County Records Service is in San Diego, and they actually give you a list daily of people who's had a notice of default filed against them. The process that worked best for me and for the originators that worked for me was actually going out at 5 or 6 o'clock at night and banging on the door and having your card, and as brutal as it is, saying, hey, I don't know if this property's in distress or not, but here's my card if you need help. You get the door slammed in your face, but as most of you know, telemarketing is all but dead, and direct mail in California is all but dead. Rob, have you had any experience or questions on how to find hard money clients?
I also, from a title company, I got the NOD list once a week, and I developed a direct marketing campaign that was very specific, that said, don't call me unless you meet this criteria.
Oh.
And I didn't get a lot of calls, but the people that did call were definitely, they met the guidelines, because I put it in the letter. I ran into a problem with a lot of deception, though. Usually guys that were in business that didn't come clean at the front, and some messy stuff. So I stopped doing it.
Gotcha.
It was taking up too much time.
It sounds like your direct mail campaign worked, though.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a standard piece, and it was hand, you know, the envelope was hand addressed with a first class stamp and all that stuff. I did everything I knew to do to get it opened. So, but I'm curious too. So you had people knocking on doors, and you've knocked on doors.
I have. Yes, I've done that, and I'll touch back on that. Let me try to get Mark's opinion though. Mark, have you what experience have you had in your limited marketing of hard money loans?
You know, I really never have proactively marketed them. As I say, I got in the business just to do, you know, a few loans that the institutions couldn't do. So that's my limited experience.
Okay. So, yes, to answer the question for you originally, Rob, yes, I did knock on doors. And I have. I haven't done it in some months, but we have the originators doing it now. And, yeah, the challenge when you're dealing with someone who's had a notice of default filed against them is a fewfold. The first is, A, they could very well be in denial, and they know they have 90 days before a notice of sale is filed, so they may just stick their head in the sand. B, the County Record Service that I subscribe to, the company that's called County Record Services, would actually get the information. I'd get the information the same time that the title company would get it. So I might be the first one, literally after they received the notice of default, that showed up on their doorstep. And sometimes that was almost to kill the messenger, you know. They weren't feeling very good at the time. So when I came in there and said, hey, I might have a solution for you, they just, you know, anything that reminded them of the notice of default they didn't like. I'd say half to 60% of the people were very receptive, though. They recognized that they were in a tough spot, and if you're genuine when you show up at the doorstep and say, hey, I don't want to bother you right now, but I just want you to know I can help you if this property is in distress. And that was kind of the key words I used. If this property is distressed, we might want to make a loan on it. We would find people that were very much more receptive, and usually a day or two later they'd call. So did that answer the question right, Rob, or did you anything follow up on
it? I do have one more, if you'll take it.
Sure, absolutely.
When you get those lists, you have, there's a lot of people that are in NOD.
Mm-hmm.
How do you screen the data to make sure that you're not going out to somebody who has no equity in their property?
That's a great question. I probably left a lot of good potential people on the table, but what I typically did was look for deeds that were filed, because they'll tell you in there what the filing date of the deed was. I looked for loans that were at least 3 years old. So there were probably a bunch of people that may have had the loan to value that is required. They may have had the requirements, but I ignored them. I just said there's so many. let me try to whittle it down to people I can help. And so that was my first screen, if you will, was let me just get people that are that have a deed that is at least, you know, a loan that is at least 3 years old. And then I went back in there and tried to match it up with the sales price to see if they had any, had they put any money down when they bought the property. And that was pretty easily to do because on the record that the county records gives you, you could see loan amount of, you know, 310, purchase price of 380. And then I kind of, you know, did some easy math and said, well, if it was bought in 2004, there might be some more equity on top of the 380. That was my second screen. And then my third screen was just, you know, how hard I wanted to work. How far was it from my office or from my house? Because if you did 10 of them, you usually could find one or two loans. That was my experience.
Huh.
Yeah. So, I mean, the answer would be, well, why don't you just do it every day? Well, it's not the most pleasant way to get business, is, you know, working from 5:30 till, say, 8:30 every night.
Are you looking at cross-purposes with all of the realtors that are trying to get in the REO business, the foreclosure business?
I'm sorry, could you ask that one more time? I didn't hear you.
Yeah. Are you competing with the realtors that are out there knocking on the same doors?
That's a great question too.
With a different solution perhaps.
Of course. Of course. I would say there's three people knocking on the doors. There's me and my group. There are real estate agents that are going out there to list the home. But they're usually a couple steps behind me. They usually don't subscribe to the county record service. They usually wait to get it from their title company. And the third and final part would be the what I call the we'll save your house for you and save your credit crowd. Has anybody been familiar with them yet, run across them at all?
Yeah, I've seen a few of those around.
And essentially they want to buy the home and lease it back to the homeowner and give him an option to buy it a year or two down the road. They're probably the most aggressive. I run across them. I mean, they might subscribe to a service that I don't. I don't even know. Maybe they just flat out stand down there at the courthouse and look over, you know, look over the recording clerk's shoulder. I don't know, because they seem to get in there really fast. I don't want to call them vultures because they give a really good service. But when you have a low loan to value like this, it seems that there's so many other options than to sell your house and to someone and buy it back down the road. So the customers are kind of aware of that. And when someone comes in there with that option, they usually say, okay, well, let me think. And they usually make them the last choice. They tend to be really receptive to when you walk in and say, I know I've got a distressed property here. I'd like to make a loan on it if you need help. They tend to respond to that the best. Did that answer the question properly?
Yeah, it did. And part of the reason I asked that question that way was I was wondering if you'd ever found a way to work through some of those agents. A friend of mine here in town has a company called foreclosures.com, and she's been quoted recently in a lot of national publications. But she, you know, kind of puts her white hat on and in training people says, you know, there's an ethical, nice way to go about this. We're out there to help people, and, you know, you'll find some deals and a lot of people you can't help. It occurs to me that everybody who's got equity would be a potential client for a realtor working foreclosures and for us, but that if somebody truly was out there looking at that from that standpoint, they might run across, you know, somebody, get in a conversation with them and say, well, you know, perhaps the client says, hey, I really don't want to sell. Do you know anybody, any hard money lenders that will make me a loan? And maybe you can get business that way. Has that ever worked?
I have not done that, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's a great way to approach it. If real estate agents are knocking on the door and you say, hey, look, if you're going with the approach I want to help you, put me in your make me an arrow in your quiver. Because in reality, probably half the loans that we'll look at for people like that, it just doesn't fit. Let me defer to Mitch and Dean on that also. You two are looking at people who are in notice of default. Deals are brought to you that way, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say that half of them just don't fit one way or the other? Or?
Most of them.
Yeah, most of them.
Today, you know.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, who brought that up? Was that Mark? Did you bring that up? Or?
Yeah, it was me, Mark.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. I mean, if you're going through real estate agents and saying, look, if you're out there banging on door, if you go out there banging on a door, come talk to me. If I can save their, if I can save them, that's the optimum choice. But, you know, probably 7 out of 10 times I can't save them. And they're going to need to talk to you, and they'll remember that you are the one that that stepped back and said, let me try to save your house first before we sell it.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking that might be a way for me to leverage through that company and through foreclosures.com offer that service and say, as you're training people and they're here locally at least, you know, yeah, like you say, put me in your quiver as in just another arrow and help you look good and help you convince the client that you really are thinking with their best interest in mind.
That's an excellent point. The other point I'll make to the few originators like us that are here, how many of you guys know real estate? How many, all of us here in California at least, how many real estate agents do we know that are underemployed, that aren't real busy right now? Lots. And a really good way to bring value to them is to say to them, hey, look, get up off your butt and go bang on some doors. I've got an NOD list. And if you say this, you might get some listings from it, and you'll get listings that are going to sell because they're going to have a time frame on them that have to be priced to that 90-day sweet spot. So that might be a value add you could bring to real estate agents in saying, look, I know you're in a funk right now. Here's something you can absolutely do that can get you business. So,
something also thinking of, you know, most of what we've talked about are refis. We do purchases also. And as long as, you know, and I do work with the realtors, I would say most of my referrals from realtors are purchases where the seller is willing to carry a second.
That's a great point, Dean. I mean, this is Dean, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's a really good point. The neat thing is, in a lot of private mortgage and private mortgage lending, it is LTV driven. And how many times have you had an investor say to them, "Hey, do you mind if the seller carries 20% or 30% back?" They shrug their shoulders and say, "I don't care. I just want to be in my first lien."
All right.
So that is. I'm glad you brought that up, Dean. That's another good value add you can bring to real estate agents.
Are you saying, though, that you guys will go to 100% CLTV on a purchase in hard money?
Well, we're first up to 65, so as long as the seller is willing to put in, as long as the buyer is willing to put in 5% or 10% for us, that's all we care if the seller is going to carry the rest. But we want to be first, and we'll go up to 65. But we do want to make sure that they have, that the buyer has some interest in the property so they don't just walk away and lose, you know, they have nothing to lose at 100%.
Sure. Now, are these purchases that you guys do, are these like self-employed people with high income? Why would someone go hard money on a purchase?
In some cases, raw. Most cases for us, raw land.
I see.
Single residences are tough unless it's some investment property and they need to fund it fast. But
I'd say for us, it's like you said, business owners, bad, you know, credit issues, but they have the income to support the payments. The other reason they might come to us is the cross collateralized. They may be cash poor, but you know, they have equity in their other properties to buy a new investment property,
right,
and leverage those other properties.
All right. The question, just to bring it up again, is, you know, on a purchase, why would they go hard money? I mean, why buy it if they're going to get into a difficult loan? And the answer a lot of times on that is, especially if it's an investment property, they might have to, or they're going to get whacked with taxes. The second thing is, sometimes someone who may have a recent bankruptcy, someone may have a number of issues that makes them a private mortgage borrower right now, but they trip across a deal. You know, they trip across something that is, oh, I don't know, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 under what they consider to be fair market value. And a lot of times, I think Mitch mentioned these are business owners, and they have an eye for value and say, I want to buy the property, and I don't care if I'm paying a high rate. I want to get into this deal.
Right.
So,
yeah, I agree exactly. In addition, you know, to the borrowers with credit issues, I would say the you know, half dozen reasons borrowers come to hard money are, you know, like we talked about before, quick closings, property issues, buying investment properties to fix up and flip,
bridge loans. They maybe have a listed property and they need to tap into the equity of their listed home to buy their next home. Developers that are, you know, looking for other opportunities may just need quick funding, you know, short-term funding. So an array of reasons.
Well, I'd like to kind of wrap this up just because I do know we can't go too long for the podcast. And I'd like to thank both of our both of the lenders who joined us. And first, I'll highlight and thank you, Mitch. This is your website, correct?
Yeah, you just brought it up. That's correct.
Okay. Mitch, your company is Equity Funding Group. You lend in California, Nevada, and Arizona.
That's right.
And your website is equityfundinggroup.com.
Correct.
Where would an originator call you to price out a deal? Will they call? Do they call you down here at the bottom left, or do you have a direct line?
I have a direct line, which is 310-948-2622. It's actually my cell phone.
Okay. So if someone goes to Equity Funding Group, they can look at a little bit of information about your company, about the loans you can do. And again, if you would, just, Mitch, repeat your phone number one more time.
Sure, area code 310-948-2622.
Okay. And, Dean, I'm going to go to you here also. Dean Huntley of Presidio Mortgage, this is your website, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That is presidiomortgage.net.
Correct, yeah, not .com.
.net, okay. And, Dean, what is your phone number should a broker need, an originator need to get a hold of you?
It's 760-450-4114.
Okay. And as we can see on your front page here, we have a breakdown of some of the unique things you'll do. And if you would, please, Dean, please repeat your phone number.
760-450-4114. Or you can go to the Contact Us and email me directly from there. So if you have an appraisal or whatever you want me to look at, just email me.
Excellent.
Can I slip in a quick question here before we finish up?
Please do.
Do we need to have a typical broker agreement?
That's a great question. I'll start with Mitch. How about you? Do you have a specific broker agreement that you use?
Yeah, for us we do. It's relatively painless, but we do like to see who we're doing business with and do ask to have a package filled in.
How about you, Dean?
No. If the loan gets sent to us and we do it, we'll put together the disclosures, and on the disclosures we'll specify, you know, pay the referral fee to whatever mortgage company.
Okay, so for you it's a referral fee.
Correct.
And Mitch, it's a little bit different. You actually have a broker agreement. Is there any buyback clause in the broker agreement?
No. You know what? There was some back and forth on that. I don't believe so. I'd have to double check.
Okay. Well, I can email you, too.
Changed.
All right.
Exactly. My company, when we deal with brokers, is we have sort of a quasi-approach, sort of a blend between both what Dean and Mitch do. We immediately have you do a submission form, putting down your compensation. We sign it and send it back to you, and then we do what Dean does. We do all the disclosures in our name, and we put down there that you're in the initial disclosures that your firm will be compensated.
And we're paying... Or escrow is paying you directly. It's not coming out of from us.
That's correct.
So when it closes, you're going to get a check from escrow. You don't have to wait for us to pay you.
Right. Cool.
Anyway, well, thank you, everybody, for coming and showing up. I do have to close it out now so it doesn't get too long. And, again, look back on bloodhelmblog.com now, bloodhelmblog.com, and we'll have the links posted up tomorrow. And, again, thank you to the lenders for participating.
Great. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Brian.